Good evening. Welcome to Monday night on the Malloy program. How you doing? Have a good weekend? I certainly hope so. Molly had a sleepover this weekend. Have a recently turned 6-year-old and a 5.5-year-old and a small puppy all in the same house together. And you tried to calm everybody down with a bowl of popcorn and the video, the Last Unicorn, and a fire in the fireplace, and it doesn't work. But it was great fun. Great fun. Two little kids and a puppy.
Well, speaking of great fun, what time are you going to be on television tomorrow?
Around 10:30 on David Schuster's program on MSNBC. Got a call this afternoon asking me to participate in one of those little events where they have some screwball right-winger and some rational liberal or Democrat, and I guess I got the lucky number this time. Did you you all know that Pennsylvania Representative John Murtha died, what was it, last week? I think it was last week. And early reports left out the cause of death, but later reports said that it could have been the surgery that it was having. I believe it was gallbladder surgery. And in the process of that procedure, some of the toxic material apparently got into his system. And he died of blood poisoning, I believe. I don't know if the term blood poisoning is used anymore. That's an old term. And suffice it to say, that's one of the reasons when we have surgery, we sign the release form that says, while the procedure is relatively simple, there are unexpected, at times, events that can occur, whether it's with the anesthesia or the procedure itself. And apparently that is what killed Representative John Murtha. At least that's what you and I in the medical profession would assume to be the truth. But according to some Southern Baptists in California, Buena Park, California, I think it was California, John Murtha died because they prayed him dead. They prayed him dead. There is a so-called pastor out there named Wiley Drake. And he wrote on his blog, maybe God took him out. Maybe God answered our imprecatory prayer that we prayed every 30 days. We prayed for him to die. Now, that's the end of the quote. Whether you like Murtha or not, a lot of people said, well, he was a real porkster. You know, always getting money for the home district. When you stop and think about it, is what members of Congress are there for, as long as we have that kind of a system, right? He was a decorated former Marine who fiercely opposed the Iraq War. As a matter of fact, there was some crazed, filthy blogger who, on his own, was celebrating, or a tweeter, Twitter, whatever, celebrating Murtha's death, with some of the most vile stuff I think I've read on the internet. You know, without using a whole lot of profanity, I don't quite understand. What's happened here, but in this country, but I guess that's part of it. Anyway, this guy was a decorated former Marine. He opposed the Iraq War. That's one of the reasons the preacher wanted him dead. The guy who blogged this wrote he asked Drake, the so-called pastor, if those statements were distasteful, particularly coming immediately after Murtha's death. And the so-called pastor said that as a Christian, he didn't buy into that nonsense about not speaking ill of the dead. Well, I don't either, Reverend, but I'm not a pastor of a corrupt faith the way you are. Anyway, the preacher went on, quote, it's not distasteful to pray the word of God and include somebody's name. I didn't celebrate his death. I said maybe it was God's answer to our imprecatory prayer, end quote. Notice the weasel words there. What a slimeball. I hope your Jesus has a special treat for you, Reverend, when you die. This reverend, according to the blogger, regularly asked his so-called prayer warriors to participate in prayer targeting what this sick bastard considers to be unrighteous politicians. I mentioned this guy a couple of months ago when he was trying to pray Obama dead. Remember that? This sick scumsucker typically uses Psalms 109. The Psalms, whew, which includes these passages. Quote, let his days be few and let another take his office, and let his children be fatherless and his wife a widow. Man. Now, as I mentioned, at one point, Drake was praying for the death of President Obama, but he dropped that because he wants to see Obama face charges that he's not a natural born citizen, so he can't be president. Excuse me. You shouldn't laugh at severe mental illness, but I can't help it where it concerns religion. Reverend Drake said he and his prayer warriors had been praying for Murtha's death for about 4 or 5 months. Among other things, Reverend Drake said Murtha's use of profanity and his use of God's name in vain was one of the reasons that they were praying, well, bite my ass, Reverend Drake, profanity, huh? He went on to say, besides praying for the death of specific politicians, they pray for, quote, politicians in general who are taking unrighteous stands, end quote. Don't you love this? This is your future, America. Thank Jesus and this reverend that I won't be around to see it. But, you know, I've got kids and grandkids that will. And like I say, I'm just making sure all of them know how to get a movable target in the scope. And squeeze, don't pull. Squeeze the trigger. Joe the plumber is back in the news. He says McCain used him. Used and abused him. Ah! Oh, Reverend Wurzelbacher has harsh words for the former Republican presidential candidate, John McCain. Wurzelberger said about McCain over the weekend, quote, I don't owe him, and the word starts with S and ends in IT. I don't owe him it. Spit, only not spit. He really screwed my life up is how I look at it. Oh, my God, another Republican Beck-fanned victim, right? Right? Here's the victim. McCain screwed up this piece of human waste life, right? You remember back during that hideous campaign how many times this sack of garbage would pop up on television programs to get his 2 cents worth in? Remember that? Wurzelberger said, quote, McCain was trying to use me. I happen to be the face of Middle America. Oh, my God. Really? Your face is Middle... He went on to say that McCain, he's no public servant. He says he dislikes McCain so much these days that he can't bring himself to support Sarah Palin either because she's campaigning for McCain's reelection. Aren't these screwballs? I mean, this is what Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly, this is what they produce. They produce dweebs like this who see our political system. No wonder Democrats are getting the hell out. I don't blame them. Of course, more Republicans are getting out than Democrats, but that's a different story. But no wonder so many people are leaving politics. Jesus Christ, who wants to get down into a bowl of vomit with people like Wurzelbacher and the rest of these people and talk about how bad Obama is. I mean, you know, Wurzelbacher is just an absolute freak. And now he's blaming McCain. He's a McCain. McCain screwed him up. Sam Wurzelbacher says McCain screwed him up. At the same event where he spoke, I wonder how much he got paid. He was at a campaign event for state Republicans in Pennsylvania. Ooh, hey, Republicans, listen to this guy. He really has your best interests at heart. He's the face of Middle America. Oh, Wurzelnutzer. Anyway, he said he appreciates Obama for his straightforwardness. He said, quote, "I think his ideology is un-American, but he's one of the more honest politicians. At least he told us what he wanted to do." You stupid son of a bitch. What did he tell you, Wurzel Nooker? In your mind, he told you that what? He wants to dismantle America, huh? Wurzel Klutzer ought to go back to wherever he's from, East Toledo, and fix himself a hot dog somewhere.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will.
To the grain on.
The hour. I must have missed this. There was a Senate hearing. I would assume it's been within the past several days. Senate hearing on foreign subsidiaries of U.S. companies dealing with Iran. You know, the big booger bear that is sitting in the in Central Asia, Iran. Because, you know, the Iranians are developing nuclear technology for something. Anyway, so there are hearings about the companies dealing with Iran. And Halliburton, Dick Cheney's company, energy services company, construction company, and all its spinoffs, they're real predatory. Predatory capitalism defined, disaster capitalists. These are people who assist in bringing about wars and death and destruction, and then get no-bid contracts. They did this for 8 years under Bush and Cheney. No-bid contracts at all, Halliburton and their subsidiaries. And then they go in and steal and loot, pillage. They don't really build anything. They make it appear they're building stuff, but the stuff they build falls apart or electrocutes and kills U.S. soldiers. Or is poison full of microbe-infested water, rotten food. This is what Halliburton and KBR and all of these companies that are connected with the Cheney, this is what they've done. And there's lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit about this. In a country that was truly moral, well, first of all, these corporations would not exist. But if they did exist, the heads of these corporations would be immediately brought before the bar of justice, and if found guilty, would be sentenced to long prison terms, or, as is in the case of other, you know, countries that are not quite as civilized as we are, they would be executed because they were working directly against the best interests of the nation. Well, the latest at this hearing that came out is that Halliburton has been selling key nuclear reactor components to a private Iranian oil company called Oriental Oil Kish as recently as 2005, using offshore subsidiaries to get past U.S. sanctions. There's a clip. I don't know if it's on YouTube yet. It was on, oh, God, where was it? Anyway, there's a clip that shows Democratic Senators Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey and Sherrod Brown of Ohio grilling Sherry Williams, who's the vice president and corporate secretary for Halliburton, about the company's ethics and questionable business practices. And Sherry Williams more or less just gives these senators the finger without actually shoving it in their face, but with her body language and her answers and her disdainful looks. Even though the senators go out of the way to congratulate her for showing up, because so many of these thuggish corporations who work in direct opposition to what we tell the world we're trying to do, bring peace and justice to the sad parts of the planet. Even though Sherry Brown is the spokesperson, is the public face for Halliburton, even though the evidence is clearly out there, I mean, Jesus, and its subsidiaries, which some of which they've now spun off, Sherry Williams sat there and, you know, if it's possible to give someone the middle finger with your eyes, Sherry Williams wrote the book on how to do that. It was just, I don't know, man. But if Halliburton, with Dick Cheney on the payroll, getting retirement benefits or whatever the hell he was getting, not retirement, I don't know what he was getting, all those years as president, vice president, and Halliburton not having to bid for contracts, all Halliburton has to do, especially during the Bush-Cheney years, was just go ahead and take the money and run. And there sits Sherry Williams, just like I said, more or less saying, to hell with you. Don't ask us questions. We don't have to answer you. We're Halliburton. Dick Cheney gives us cover and protection. What is wrong with you, you know? So I just wonder, I watched a little bit of the nightly news tonight. I don't know when this Senate hearing was. I should. And I don't, but in watching this video tonight, I just wonder, well, why was this not on the news? You know, just to put these corporate mouthpieces out there. Now, this bit of tape or this bit of the video that someone sent me might have been months old, because this is not new. This is not new to anyone, that Halliburton and Dick Cheney and most of corporate America has no problem sending our men and women into combat. They don't give a damn about them, but just so they can get the spoils of war. They're vultures, buzzards, they're flesh eaters, and they should be removed. They should be shut down and removed, and their corporate executives put on trial for their lives.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. See, these are the kinds of items, the kinds of stories that just, I don't know, they're almost incomprehensible to me that I live in a country that allows this to happen. That a company like Halliburton, with its tentacles so deeply embedded in the previous 8 years of of the Bush-Cheney administration, and prior to that, there's so many American, Republican politicians have had something to do with these companies that do business with the what Bush and Cheney labeled the axis of evil, and they still do. Son of a bitch! I mean, how does this happen? Why does nobody talk about this in so-called mainstream useless media? Why is this never exposed? You know, this is as recently as 2005, slam in the middle of the Bush-Cheney administration, selling nuclear technology, nuclear reactor components to Iran at the very same time the Bush-Cheney crime family was ordering U.S. Naval units to surround Iran, SEAL teams to invade Iran. And here you and I and the American public, we just sit back, these stories leak out, and nothing happens. And the wall of confusion that is set up by corporate media that includes mostly Fox and all of these pigs that are so corrupting this country, the Becks and the Limbaughs and, you know, the usual gang of sons of bitches. And they just keep it up and they get paid millions and millions of dollars to destroy America, to utterly and absolutely continue their destruction of America. How does this go on with no apparent means of stopping it? It just goes on. And to see Sherry Williams, the vice president and corporate secretary for Halliburton, sitting there in front of the Senate committee when she's being questioned. Oh, and by the way, during that committee hearing, the Republicans got up and left. The Republican senators didn't want their traitorous asses to be in any way connected to the grilling of a vice president for Halliburton. Because if they were connected, even remotely, then their funds would dry up for reelection. And people wonder why someone like Evan Bayh or anybody said, you know, I don't care what his motives were. I don't care that he was a conservative Democrat or Republican. I don't care. I really don't. What I care about is when the man says, you know, I like serving the people of Indiana. I like doing this, but I don't like being in Congress. How could you? How could anyone? It's an absolute sewer. It's loaded with filth, and the filth just keeps getting deeper and stinkier because of the Becks and the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the Palins and the O'Reillys, these people who despise the country. But to commit acts of pure treason, I guess. I mean, I frankly don't see a thing wrong with selling nuclear reactor components to a private Iranian oil company called Oriental Oil Kish. I'm not the one that labeled Iran part of the axis of evil. I'm not the one who has suggested that the United States and Israel should launch massive unconditional bombing assault against Iran. That came from Bush and Cheney and Netanyahu and the Likudniks in Israel. And the crazy people in America running our government. And yet, Dick Cheney's company just has no problem. No bid contracts, no bid this, sell the U.S. military poison food, corrupted water, showers that will electrocute people, soldiers, and kill them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Hide the sale in an offshore subsidiary because, you know, Congress is dumber than dog droppings. And besides, the American people are even stupider. And how does Halliburton get paid for all this? Well, in so many instances, they're paid with money from the Defense Department. Where does the money from the Defense Department come from? Didn't Barack Obama just submit a proposed budget where the defense industry is going to get over almost $1 trillion this year? Huh? But, you know, let's talk about whether Obama is a Kenyan or not. Let's talk about death panels. Let's talk about... Man, oh man, oh man. Astonishing. Just astonishing. How do you support the troops? Well, you wear a flag in your lapel. You wear one of those little lapel pins. You put one of these plastic loops on the back of your car that says support the troops. Of course, all that stuff is made in China. McClatchy Newspapers, I think today, has an article about, this is not new. I can remember talking about this a year, year and a half ago, but it keeps coming up because nothing's being done about it. Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, The Marines that were on that base that lived there or did their training there between 1957 and 1987, 30 years, they're dying. They're dying of cancer. They're dying of all sorts of horrible diseases, lymphomas. what happened, there's one example, this guy that McClatchy Newspapers talks about, this guy named Paul Akers. He lived on the base for years as a young kid while his father was in the Marine Corps. And young Paul Akers would build forts among the pine trees and splash it in a kiddie pool with his little sister. And it turned out that the water in the kiddie pool that came from Camp Lejeune's water supply was poisonous. Now, this was discovered a quarter of a century ago, 25 years ago. So this is not new stuff. But using this one example, Paul Akers, neither he nor his sister, had known that residents of Camp Lejeune drank contaminated well water for decades. The Marines have registered thousands of people across the country who say they've been eaten up by illnesses as a result of that toxic water. But the Department of the Navy, which includes the Marine Corps, still refuses to pay for $1.5 million study into the deaths of former residents at Camp Lejeune. Marines who went through there say, we ate food cooked in the water, we drank the water, we bathed in the water, everything we did in the water. Some estimates are that over a 30-year period, as many as 1 million people were exposed to well water that contained TCE, which is trichloroethylene, or a PCE, which is tetrachloroethylene, plus benzene and vinyl chloride. Those chemicals were dumped into storm drains. They leaked from fuel tanks or buried in pits across the base. This is stuff that goes into jet fuel. There are also solvents. They're industrial chemicals. The stuff was just dumped, and it got into the groundwater and into the wells that fed this base. A 2007 law, 3 years ago, required the Marine Corps to warn former residents of the potential danger. But so many of these folks, according to the report, had never even been contacted. The members of Congress just want a study done, a mortality study, to be done by the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. It's an arm of the CDC. And it was created to assess the health hazards from environmental Superfund sites. The study's required by law under some title of some act of Congress. But Navy Secretary Ray Mabus said last year that because previous research released last summer found no link to the toxic water, the mortality study is unnecessary. But who did the other toxic study? It's unclear how many people the toxic water may have sickened. But at this point, 133,000 former Marines, family members, and civilian employees have registered with the Marine Corps as potential victims of the contamination. After North Carolina, the states with the most registrants are Florida and California. News of this contamination was on base, was first reported in a base newspaper and then in the Raleigh News and Observer newspaper 25 years ago. It just goes on and on. It just goes on and on. But I'll tell you what, rather than address issues like this, just wear one of those little flag pins. Wear one of those little flag pins and put that metallic ribbon-looking thing on the back of your car that says, I support the troops, and just forget about it.
So out of breath, the captain said, excuse me, ma'am, the species has amused itself to death.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Yeah, there is no real answer to that question. How do they get away with it? But Tom in Minneapolis tries to answer here. He says, Dick Cheney's Halliburton selling nuclear reactor technology to Iran while Bush and Cheney call Iran the axis of evil. That's just the ruling class. They want Iran to build nuclear reactors so that the ruling class can turn around and justify an invasion of Iran with hard evidence. Dick Cheney with the goddamn receipts. By arming the enemy of the United States, the U.S. can justify invading that enemy. All this filthy politicking and military sales to the enemies of the U.S. furthers the agenda of the war machine. Tom in Minneapolis, yeah. Yeah, I know. My question really is not why it happens. I understand why it happens. The part that gets me is how ignorant, just how butt-level ignorant Americans are that this is
so
being, you might be thinking, what might a, that this is being done in, you know, in, I don't know what that was, folks, but don't let it scare you. I have, the thing that puzzles me is how, why this is being done and how they get away with it and why nobody in this country cares. And of course, the answer is the same answer for all of it. The stupidity of the American people, and we're kept stupid. It's not that we're born stupid, we're born ignorant, but we're kept stupid by, you know, the people who are paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to make sure the stupidity goes on and on and on. You want another example? New York Times editorial on the, I guess it was today, titled Seven Paragraphs. Did you read this? There are times when governments fight to keep documents secret because, you know, they got to protect vital stuff, right? And then there are other times when the governments are just trying to cover up their criminal activity or their incompetence. Huh? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Times says last week when a British court released secret intelligence material relating to the torture allegations of a former Guantanamo prisoner, Binyam Mohammed, it was clear that it was lawbreaking. Misbehavior, incompetence that had been in play when both the Bush and the Obama administrations and some high-ranking British officials tried to prevent the stuff from getting out. Now, in case you don't remember, Binyam Mohammed is an Ethiopian-born British resident, and he was a victim of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney's so-called Extraordinary Rendition Program. That's the one where foreigners were kidnapped and flown to other countries for torture. This guy, Binyam Mohammed, was subjected to physical and psychological torture in Pakistan, Morocco, and a CIA-run prison outside Kabul, Afghanistan, before he was sent to Guantanamo. Huh? Could you stand that? Could you take all that? He was incarcerated, tortured, and made half insane for 7 years. And then last February, they let him go. Huh? At issue in the British court were seven paragraphs derived from American intelligence documents. The Bush administration claimed the material contained top secret information and threatened to cut off intelligence sharing with Britain if it was released. And last year, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton repeated those threats. Despite Obama's campaign promises of openness and the rule of law, where it concerns his detainee policy. Well, the paragraphs were released. No secrets. Mainly, the document echoes previous disclosures by the CIA and Mr. Mohammed's harrowing account of his ordeal. But what the seven paragraphs does contain is the assessment by British intelligence that his treatment violated legal prohibitions against torture and cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment of prisoners. A spokesman for President Obama, our savior. A spokesman for President Obama expressed, quote, deep disappointment, end quote, in the court's decision. In the court's decision to release this. Deep disappointment. which might have been shocking, except that Mr. Obama has refused to support any real investigation of Mr. Bush's lawless detention policies. Matter of fact, Obama's lawyers have tried to shut down court cases filed by victims of those policies with the same extravagant claims of state secrets and executive power that Mr. Bush made. Goddamn Barack Obama. Goddamn Barack Obama. Goddamn his entire administration. I am so sick of these people. I am so sick of them. Bush, Cheney, teabaggers, Beck, Obama, all of them. All of them. The full Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is weighing the Justice Department's attempt to shut down a civil lawsuit brought by Mr. Muhammad and four others on the claim of national security that has now been made even more ridiculous given the order by the British court to release this garbage. And then, of course, there's Maher Arar, the Syrian-born Canadian citizen who was seized at Kennedy Airport by federal agents. After being harshly interrogated, he was sent to Syria, where he was tortured. This past November, Mr. Arar's civil suit was dismissed by the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which essentially said the Bush administration's bogus national security claims were right and were extended under Barack Obama. Mr. Arar has appealed to the Supreme Court. Rather than fight, the Obama administration should offer an apology and a settlement like Canada did 3 years ago. I'm so goddamn tired of these people, all of them. I say it's time. It is really time. Just walk away from it. Don't vote. Don't do anything. Just walk away from it. Let these teabagging mofos have the whole thing and let the entire country collapse. We'll survive. We'll rebuild it. We'll start over again. We'll be back after the break.
Do you know why?
It is 7 past the hour. Robert Perry, excuse me, writing at consortiumnews.com, points out the fact that Dick Cheney has exposed a torture conspiracy at the highest levels of the U.S. government. And in so doing, if more evidence were necessary of the criminal activities of the Bush crime family during all those years, this is it. This would be it, although nothing would be done about it, absolutely nothing. The United States has become a complete outlaw nation, totally. And it keeps getting handed off from administration to administration. As Perry writes, if the United States had a functioning criminal justice system for the powerful, not just for people that, you know, break into grocery stores, former Vice President Dick Cheney would have convicted himself and some of his Bush administration colleagues with his comments on ABC's This Week. On Sunday, Cheney pronounced himself, quote, a big supporter of waterboarding, end quote. Now, there's no point in reiterating what that is, an ear drowning technique that U.S. authorities had always treated as a serious war crime, like when the Japanese commanders were prosecuted for it, for using on American prisoners during World War II. But never mind. Cheney was unrepentant, Perry writes, about his support for the technique. He answered with an emphatic yes when asked if he had opposed the Bush administration's decision to suspend the use of waterboarding after that technique was employed against three so-called high-value detainees in repetitive sequences. Who's the guy that was waterboarded 183 times, right? Cheney added that waterboarding should still be, quote, on the table, end quote, today. And even went further, speaking with a sense of impunity. He casually negated a key line of defense that senior Bush officials had hidden behind for years, and that is that the brutal interrogations were approved by the independent Justice Department legal experts like John Yoo, who thus gave the administration a legitimate reason to believe the actions were within the law. But on Sunday, Cheney acknowledged that the White House, that would be Cheney and Bush and their close advisors, had told the Justice Department lawyers what opinions to render. In other words, the opinions amounted to ordered up lawyering to permit the Bush crime family to do whatever it wanted. Son of a bitch. I didn't see this on tonight's news either, did you? And the brain-dead half-wits who conduct these Sunday television programs, all of them, did any of them raise any sand about this? In responding to a question about why he had so aggressively attacked Barack Obama's counter-terrorism policies, Cheney explained that he had been concerned about the new administration prosecuting some CIA operatives who had handled the interrogations and, quote, disbarring lawyers with the Justice Department who had helped us put these policies together. He went on to say, I thought it was important for some senior person in the administration to stand up and defend those people who'd done what we had asked them to do, end quote. Whoa. They did what we asked them to do. So John Yoo and his boss, Jay Bybee, and the rest of them were just, you know, the Office of Legal Counsel. Remember that? A powerful agency that advises the president on the limits of his power. They did what we asked them to do. Cheney, in his psychotic hubris, admitted on television that he is a criminal co-conspirator in one of the most violent acts against humanity that this country's ever perpetrated. Really? I mean, seriously. What? The atom bomb? Well, okay. In 2003, after John Yoo left to be a law professor at University of California, Berkeley, and Jay Bybee was elevated to a federal appeals court judgeship in San Francisco. Their successors withdrew the memos because of what they called sloppy scholarship. But in 2005, Bush appointed a new acting chief of the Office of Legal Counsel, Stephen Bradbury, who restored the Yoo Bybee opinions. In essence, the Bush-Cheney defense was that the Office of Legal Counsel lawyers offered honest opinions and that everyone from the president and vice president who approved the use of torture down to the CIA interrogators who conducted the torture operated in good faith. Well, my goodness, the lawyers said it was okay. The Justice Department. If, however, that narrative proved to be false, Perry writes, if the lawyers had colluded with the policymakers, Bush and Cheney, to create legal excuses for criminal acts, then the Bush-Cheney defense for all this could collapse or would collapse. Rather than diligent lawyers providing professional advice, the picture would be of mob attorneys counseling crime bosses on how to evade the law. Perry adds, though Bush administration defenders have long denied that the legal opinions were cooked, the evidence has long supported the conspiracy interpretation. For instance, in his 2006 book, War by Other Means, John Yoo, described his involvement in frequent White House meetings regarding what other means should receive the legal stamp of approval. Other means, you know, torture. This is what you wrote, quote, "As the White House held its procession of Christmas parties and receptions in December 2001, senior lawyers from the Attorney General's office, the White House Counsel's office, the Department of State, the Department of Defense, and the National Security Council met a few floors away to discuss the work on our opinion. This group of lawyers," you said in the book, "would meet repeatedly over the next months to develop policy on the war on terrorism." Well, what? Attorney General's office, White House, Department of State, Department of Defense, National Security Council? Woohoo! You said the meetings were usually chaired by Alberto Gonzalez, who was at that time White House counsel. And, of course, later became Bush's attorney general. You identified other key players as Timothy Flanagan, Gonzalez's deputy, William Howard Taft IV from the State Department, John Bellinger from the National Security Council, William Haynes from the Pentagon, and David Addington, who was Dick Cheney's lawyer. In his book, you described a give and take among participants at the meeting with the State Department's William Howard Taft IV, challenging John Yoo's view that Bush could waive the Geneva Conventions regarding the invasion of Afghanistan. Taft noted that the Taliban was the recognized government of the country. See, we could invade as long as we could determine that Afghanistan was a failed state, I guess. And this just goes on and on and on and on. What Yoo's book and other evidence makes clear is that the lawyers from the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel weren't just legal scholars handing down opinions from an ivory tower. They were participants in how to make Bush's actions, quote, legal, end quote. My God. My God. A little bit more on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Past the hour, finishing up this piece by Robert Perry regarding the torture, the so-called torture memos that were written by you and Bybee and the rest of them, and these other legal opinions. They were considered so unprofessional that Bybee's replacement to head the Office of Legal Counsel within the Justice Department, a guy named Jack Goldsmith, who also was a conservative Republican, he took the extraordinary step of withdrawing these memos after he was appointed in October of 2003. But Goldsmith was pushed out of his job after a confrontation with Cheney's legal counsel, Addington. And the later appointment of this guy Bradbury enabled the Bush White House to reinstate many of the Hugh Bybee opinions. Now, remember how those opinions were written. They were written in a conspiracy to violate U.S. law, international law, Geneva Conventions, human rights agreements, treaties signed by the United States. These son of a bitches, these Bush son of a bitches, violated the law to an extent that would make Dick Nixon look like a punk piker who had just got busted for pickpocketing. And he resigned. And Nancy Pelosi said impeachment is off the table. Jesus God. Last month, Newsweek reported that John Yoo and Bybee had avoided any disciplinary recommendations because a draft report by the Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility had been rewritten to remove harsh criticism that these two bastards had violated professional standards. The language was softened to simple criticism of their judgment. The weaker language, Robert Perry writes, meant that the Justice Department would not refer the cases to state bar associations for possible disbarment proceedings. Bybee's a judge. You is a tenured professor. And the work goes on in the capable hands of the Obama administration. So Cheney's comments on this week, corroborating that you and Bybee, quote, had done what we asked them to do, end quote, suggests that former Bush administration officials are very confident that they will never face accountability from the Obama administration for war crimes. Absolutely not. And Perry writes, though the ABC News interviewer Jonathan Carl deserves some credit for posing the waterboarding question to Cheney to begin with, it was notable that Carl didn't react with any shock or even a follow-up when Cheney pronounced himself a fan of the torture practice. Now, a leader of another country, if the leader of another country had referred to himself as, quote, a big supporter of waterboarding or torture or whatever, there would have been a clamor for his immediate arrest and trial at The Hague. Right? And that Cheney feels that he can operate, he can go on television and say this stuff with such impunity. Just sticking his fingers into the eyes of the American public, the rule of law, all of it. Is, as Robert Perry says, a damning commentary on the rule of law in the United States, at least when it comes to the nation's elites. So how do you handle that, truth seeker? Do you dedicate yourself to working for the Obama administration? Do you dedicate yourself to doing what? To working for liberals? There aren't any running for office. There are no liberals. There are a couple still in the House and the Senate, but they will soon be gone. So what do you do? What do you do? You're an honest-to-God American. You love the principles that you think your country was founded on, even though they were a little bit dodgy at the very beginning. You're just tired of these Republican killers until you realize that the Republican killers only operate because of the Democratic enablers. What do you do? Do you say, well, I'm going to reform the system? This system is so rotten. Come on. Come on. Admit it. Admit it. Open your eyes. Smell the coffee, as Ann Landers used to say. Wake up. Smell the coffee. Rotten to the core. So what do you do? Huh? Do you try to reform something that is filthy and rotten and covered with maggots? What do you do? Interesting question, huh?
Two.
people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Money's good, work's okay.
25 before the hour. Phone number is 877-996-2556 if you want to comment. Steve, the banker, sent me an email here. Hi, Mike. How many times do we have to be lied to in one lifetime? Everything you are talking about tonight is serious and real and is contributing to the end of our society as we knew it. First, people in New Jersey and Massachusetts have given the Democratic Party the blueprint to win. Either do the hard things like ending the war and getting single-payer health care passed, or we'll continue to stay home while Republicans are motivated to go out and vote. That's the equation, and it will continue. Patrick Kennedy and Evan Bayh, Indiana, and there will be lots more who will simply drop out. We're going to lose our leadership, whatever is left of it, if this continues. But it is obvious that anything progressive will not survive the Democratic caucus. We have nowhere to vote because the Democrats have no clue on how to do the right thing, and that is to follow their political left-wing base. We are the ones who have stayed true for all these decades, and the young kids that joined the movement this year, the elected idiots, had it all, a dream team, the young and the old activists all working together. Well, the DNC has squandered the best chance to move forward since 1960. The train is derailed, and unless the war is ended on a dime and regulations are enforced and jobs are invested in and a 21st century America is built, then you will see a Republican landslide. And that's the last thing I want for me or my family or this country or for those people around the globe. I'm still fighting for a Democratic Party that cares about Social Security and the hungry and the poor and the homeless, and a party that works for peace and remembers what the four freedoms are. Instead, we are left with an elected class that has derailed all the most recent movements, peace, health care, etc. We're left with no party, no society, no country. We are left with corporate fascism. That's all we have left. The Democrats won't fight for the homeless, the sick, the displaced. Why? Where are the hearings? Where are the hearings for truth? Where are the hearings about the Federal Reserve? Where are the hearings about the war lies? Who will pay for those who were murdered for policies of lies? When will the Democrats remember the Constitution? Steve the banker. P.S. The number of foreclosures is again heading off the table, skyrocketing out of sight. Business loans, homes, etc. I see no end in sight. Sorry, Mike, but it's not good. We need the war money here, now, invested in America. It will soon be too late. Yeow. I got to find a different job. I got to get the hell out of here. I cannot. I don't want to be in a position where I have to watch my own country and then talk about it, go down the toilet, go down the sewer. Do you? Aren't you ready to just pack it in where it concerns so-called liberal talk radio? The crazy people have really, really won. They really have. I know. We're not supposed to talk the way we're supposed to have. Hope! God damn it, hope! Okay, let's have hope. Let's have hope. And what is it we're going to hope for? Who's the next Democrat you're going to try to get elected? Huh? The fascists, these filthy, rotten Republicans are just sitting back on their asses. All they had to do, because the Democratic Party is corrupt, and the Republican Party knows this. The Republican Party wrote the book on corruption and murder and mayhem and lies and deceit and cheating and no honor, no ethics, no morality. They know. And all they had to do is just prevail upon their friends in the House and the Senate until they, too, would start to wobble. Democratic Party has just wobbled off the road, really stuck in a cornfield someplace, just sitting there spinning the wheels. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do, truth seekers? Are you going to vote for another Democrat, knowing full well that if you do, you might as well throw your vote in the toilet? What are you going to do? Now, I'm not asking that question as a challenge. I'm looking for answers, man, because that's exactly where I am. I mean, I am not going to vote Democratic again. I won't do it. Now, if a candidate comes along that is impressive, I may go ahead and exercise my franchise, you know, the right to vote, what millions of Americans have died for, defending mom and freedom and the flag and the right to vote. Oh, give me a goddamn break. It all ended with the Supreme Court. It was close to ending, but this filthy, rotten Supreme Court on December 12th, 2000, and a week and a half ago, brought it all to an end. It's over. So what do you do? Come on, truth seeker. Somebody give me an answer. I am looking for an answer, man. I would go to Tom Hartman, but I, you know, he gets too historic. I just want a simple answer. I really do. I'm just looking for simple answers, man. That's all. Just a simple answer. What to do? What to do? If, you know, next person that says, well, you got to get out and organize, I'm going to hit him with a dead fish. I swear to God, get out and organize. Who? What? To what end? So what to do? Continue to vote Democratic? Republicans, Libertarians, Democrats. Every one of them is corrupt to the bottom of their soul, the soles of their feet. Oh, don't tell me about Ron Paul. I just don't, you know. He's corrupt too. Absolutely corrupt. All of these people. So what do you do? Oh, you don't think he's corrupt? Are you familiar with all of his points of view, his political points of view? Make damn good and sure you're familiar with everything he advocates before you send me these half-assed emails about voting for Ron Paul or considering Ron Paul. Get real. So what to do? What to do? What to do? Nobody likes a quitter unless she can go out and make millions and millions and millions of dollars by going before teabag rallies and Republican, Nobody likes a quitter. So how do you quit the only political system you've ever lived in, knowing that it has become so corrupt, no matter what you did, and hundreds of thousands of people just like you who tried and tried, and millions who tried and tried and tried for the last 40 years to defeat this corporate, filthy, Republican, neo-Christian garbage. And it didn't work. Didn't fight hard enough, I guess. Not enough blood in the street. I mean, this was not like your typical, oh, no, you're not going to resistance in a lot of countries around the world. It may take them 5 years to bring down a corrupt, filthy regime. It may take 50,000 dead in the streets. It may take all sorts of things. But eventually the people win if the people are being led properly and if the people respond properly, if the people have any understanding of their own country, their own constitution. We don't have any of that. We have no leadership. We're dumber than dog snot. We don't have a clue. And the propaganda machines grind 24/7, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruit of plain without let up. The economy has been bankrupted and destroyed. So what do you do? Do you say, oh, okay, Mike, goddamn, I guess I'm just going to go eat worms? I don't know. I guess you have to make your own decision. That's what I'm struggling with. What to do? What in the hell to do? What is the proper response to all this? You know, Cheney goes on television this weekend and Biden, and they're on dueling channels or whatever. And both of them make absolutely no sense whatsoever. But the one who is a goddamn criminal sitting there, a murderer, a war criminal, is Cheney. And these networks allow him on, invite him on. Hey, the battle of the vice presidents. Yoo-hoo! Hey, hold on to your ass. Watch this, America. Huh? Is this a neat trick? Watch this. Watch this. Watch this. You watching? Watch this. Watch this. Cheney said, no, no. Biden said, no, no. Yeah, but Cheney said, yeah, but Biden said, oh, isn't this fun? Screw the Olympics. How about this? Woohoo! So what do you do? I'll tell you what. When we come back after this break, we'll take some phone calls. Maybe somebody has some ideas. I don't know. I'm out of ideas. And I would ask Tom Hartman to help me, but, you know, he gets so historical on me, you know?
Time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. You let it, it'll drive you crazy, there's hope. But I'm taking back my power today, there's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising, there's hope. The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can do, cause they're willing to sleep.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Dave is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mike?
Obviously not very good.
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah, it's kind of a hard to believe thing, you know, it's just like so much has gone on for so many years and it just continues, you know, it's hard to believe, but, you know, I think this has all kind of gone on since back in the revolutionary days, you know, the English were all PO'd about us winning our independence and the bankers there got burned and, you know, they've just more or less been working from the inside, you know, with their spawn, might say, to undermine the country since then. I mean, it's just been one thing after another. Like Civil War time, the Rothschilds were trying to loan Lincoln money for the Civil War at 35% interest and, you know, all these little things through the years and I don't know what the answer is. You know, it's so totally interwoven in our makeup here. I mean, it's like everywhere. It's hard to believe. Yeah. So I don't know. I think maybe Cheney's going to do one of these Kenley heart attack things, you know, and they won't ever have a casket.
Well, he doesn't have to. I mean, he doesn't have to take the ultimate cop-out. He knows. Cheney knows where he lives. He knows who controls the media. He knows how the government works. He knows what a big flock of sheep the American public really is, you know, with a couple of exceptions, and those exceptions are no threat to Dick Cheney at all. Like he said to Pat Leahy on the floor of the Senate, go F yourself. That's Cheney's attitude about everything. And he is, Dick Cheney and that whole group are above the law. They operate in an entire different universe from the one that you and I operate in, Dave. If you and I right now pick up guns and walk into a supermarket and rob the office and walk out with, you know, $6,000-$7,000, you and I are going to go to prison for probably the rest of our natural lives. Dick Cheney can engineer death on a scale and torture and invasions and human rights violations on a scale that you and I can't even imagine. And this son of a bitch walks free and pats himself on the back for all that in front of everybody on television, and nobody will do anything.
Yeah, I know.
Nobody will do a thing.
It always worried me when he was off somewhere. Nobody knew where.
Right.
You know, you were. I was always thinking, what in the hell is he up to now? You know, it's like,
yeah.
He's just a sociopath or narcissistic or whatever.
All of it. It's just crazy, Dave. And Dave, thanks. I got to move on here and pick up some more calls. I appreciate what you had to say. All of that. I mean, we can sit here all night, and I do it a lot, and it's an exercise in utter futility, if not stupidity. To label Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney doesn't need a label. I don't know why I do that. I really don't. None of these pigs need a label. They know what they are. They know who we are. So do we. You know what they've done. I know what they've done. It's not some undefinable amorphous blob of misdirected consciousness that has brought this once great country, or tried to be great country, to its elbows. Not that at all. What has brought this country down has been the fact that the American public, first of all, decided to be just monumentally ignorant. Secondly, to turn over the running of government to a class of people that normally you wouldn't allow to come and fix the toilet in your spare bathroom. And third, we just decided, as we watched country after country protest when elections were stolen, we watched people take to the streets. We watched people saying no, hell no, when it was clear, very clear, that an election had been, if not stolen, certainly tampered with. And what did we do when we sit back and watch it on television? We just go, oh yeah, nah, damn, look at that. Hey, dinner ready? You know, that's what we did. So it's not like some monster from the 12th dimension or somebody from some planetary system around Arcturus that landed here and took over. No. So I guess historically speaking, once you get to the point where the system has become so corrupt and it's in the hands, so much of it is in the hands of a moneyed elite, when invisible creatures have been declared equal to human beings where it concerns the right to corrupt the system, i.e. corporations. When all that has happened, when your media, especially the media that most people have pumped into their ears, talk radio, talk television, when the media has become absolutely corrupt and is run by insane people, multimillionaires, who want nothing more than to further destroy the country as we've known it, and turn it into the type of Nazi-like corporate state that they know they'll be secure in because they helped bring about that corporatist state. But don't forget what happened during the French Revolution. You know, the very people who initiated the revolution and supported eventually had their heads roll into the basket too. So there's a lot of reason to be uncertain right now. We'll take some more calls when we come back, because I'm really curious about if anybody's got any ideas, or is this, I mean, doing this program, is this just bubblegum? This is something I do 3 hours a night, is something you tune in and listen to for maybe 20, 30 minutes and bail out. You know, bubblegum. We'll talk to you when we come back. Stay with us. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the uplifting, very positive, forward-looking Malloy program. Forward-looking for sure. I don't know about positive and uplifting. Lori is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I had a question. I don't like Nancy. Impeachment is off the table, Pelosi, and I've been really frustrated by everything or the lack of things that have happened in the last year. But I asked Kathy, does she know or do you know, has George Bush or Dick Cheney left the country since they've been out of office?
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I think George Bush didn't even go to Haiti. Bill Clinton did. Remember?
Bill Clinton was there.
Bush and Clinton were appointed by their co-conspirator Barack Obama to lead this mission to Cheney. Damn, I'm getting all confused. To Haiti, and I don't think Bush left the country. I think he's afraid to. I think his lawyers have said don't. I mean, he went to Canada. He gave a speech in Canada. That's certainly out of the country. But
I'm wondering if he went to I love Canada. I think they're great. But if he went somewhere that might actually dare to do something to bring him to The Hague.
I don't think anybody's going to do that. I read a very interesting essay about 6 months ago written by, I don't know, somebody from Mother Jones or The Nation. I forget who it was. But the case was laid out how arresting or taking into custody George Bush or Dick Cheney any place on earth simply will not happen. And the main reason is because we are still the United States. We still... and by that I mean we still strike terror into the hearts of just anyone whose hearts we want to strike terror. Whether it would be economic sanctions or threats of war or, dark conspiratorial moves to overthrow the government of whoever busted our war criminals. So I think Cheney understands, and he's let Bush understand, that they're pretty much globally immune. Somebody like Kissinger still has a chance of getting busted by somebody. Even that's a little bit iffy, but the United States would toss him in the creek in a heartbeat because, first of all, he's Jewish. Secondly, he's old. And third, he doesn't speak good English anyway. So not to worry about him. The United States, the power elite really do, and I'm going to get an argument about this on both sides, but they really do hate minorities, including religious minorities, including Jews. So Henry Kissinger, being Jewish, he would be, they would cut him loose. If he ever does get busted, the power establishment in this country will say, ta-ta, bye. But Cheney's different. He's Christian. He's white, he's powerful, and he knows that he is absolutely beyond prosecution anywhere on earth.
Oh, we really don't have any hope of doing anything.
No. The gang that came in by stealing an election, first of all, it takes chutzpah of the highest degree to spend a number of years and a number of administrations, a couple of administrations, I should say, stacking the Supreme Court further and further and further to the right so that when, if the opportune moment came, not when, if, it was never certain that the opportune moment would come, but it did come, and it came on December 12, 2000, and that right-wing Supreme Court did what generations of neo-fascists in this country have been trying to do, without throwing the country, into bloody open conflict. And that was they ended the democratic process as surely as somebody's head being removed with a guillotine. It was all over on December 12th, 2000, when the United States Supreme Court stopped the vote counting in Florida because George Bush would have wound up the aggrieved or the grievous or the whatever the hell the terminology was, party. So they stopped the vote counting. And so to wait for that moment and then to move the way they moved, all five of them in lockstep say, okay, this is our chance. This is it. We're probably going to do this again. Let's go for it. So they went for it. And, the country has never been the same. Step two was what happened 10, 12 days ago when corporations were declared to have the same rights under the U.S. Constitution as people. And once that happens, then bingo. Whatever loose end need to be tied up where it concerned the end of a representative government in this country, it was tied up with that Supreme Court ruling.
Well, what about like going after Cheney's or some of his companies? I mean, they're throwing these contractors out of Iraq. Ken Lee was scheduled to go to jail. He died first, but I mean, sometimes that works.
Well, the Iraqis have said, that they will decide who gets to provide security for whom in their country, which is a lot of bravado and nonsense because Maliki, the president or whatever he is, prime minister of Iraq, knows full well that a couple of Blackwater operatives hiding in a closet someplace could put 6, 8, 12 bullets in his head before he could say Shiite. So he's, plus he's corrupt too. That's all for show. These private contractors are going nowhere. But Maliki, I guess, felt compelled or somebody ordered him to say that they would be gone, that the Iraqis would make these decisions. Bat squat. The Iraqis haven't made a decision since, Saddam Hussein was offed. So. I don't know. It looks pretty bleak, Lori. I don't know. I don't know how to go about, maybe a citizen's arrest. I'm going to deputize you, Lori. I want you to stalk Dick Cheney until you have an opportunity. Walk up to him and say, I, Lori, citizen of Minneapolis, state of Minnesota, do hereby place you under arrest, and then call for the nearest cop. And no, not going to work? All right. Thanks, Lori. I appreciate you checking in. I wonder what would happen to somebody who did try to do that. They'd probably immediately have about 60 bullet holes in them, right? Michael is in British Columbia. Hey, Michael.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, I was listening to a show tonight, a little show about Guatemala, and it kind of reminded me of the whole Eisenhower, United Fruit Company, corporate foreign policy debacle down there where I think over 200,000 people died.
What?
Still there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry if I was losing you. Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
I just wonder, I mean, does this really change anything? I mean, is the outcome not the same?
Does what change anything?
The corporate, the ruling by the Supreme Court. I mean,
it does, because now, whereas in the past, before that ruling, it was still possible to get somebody elected who wasn't totally corrupted. Eventually, they become corrupt, or they resign, they say, I'm not going to run for re-election. Now, just, maintaining this phony-ass illusion that we have a democratic republic and that the people decide who its representatives are going to be, that farce no longer has to be maintained, that facade no longer has to be maintained. And it also means that the selection process, it won't be too much longer before, and you mark my words on this, it won't be too much longer before in this country the whole idea of voting will get down to something like American Idol, where the candidates.
Oh, no, I believe it.
Yeah, the candidates will be chosen by corporate America through an interview process, not unlike what the panel in American Idol puts the would-be American Idols through. And then, you get to watch a couple of months of that and laugh at them and hoot and holler about how stupid they are and how bad they are. And, ew, look at that one. That's how the selection process is going to go. It'll be a panel, maybe somebody from AT&T, maybe somebody from Chase, maybe somebody from Goldman Sachs. There'll probably be 10, 12 of them. On the board, and this board, you go before the board, for your audition. And if you say the right things about how you're going to treat corporate America and be a good little slave, then they move you on to the next level. You get to go to Hollywood. And then, once you get to Hollywood, then the further auditions and a weeding out process until finally the big day comes and everybody votes on their cell phone. Yeah! Like that. Thanks, Michael.
Every color and culture. Every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's 22 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Stephen is in Burbank listening on Sirius. Hey, Stephen.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
One of the signs of insanity is keep doing the same thing, expecting different results.
Yeah.
But I'm getting better because I don't expect different results. But I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing, and that's handing out the documentaries, lending them out. And I'm going to start proclaiming that at last we have achieved true equality. No longer is there the lesser of two evils. The Democrats and the Republicans, exactly the same. No difference whatsoever.
Well, I don't see that quite yet. The Republicans still, the Republicans to me are just murderous swine, whereas the Democrats are just swine.
Yeah. Well, what the Democrats did see in Massachusetts was can I call them hard left supporters, you know, the real progressives?
Yeah.
That said, you know what, we're sending a message, and I'm going to just follow their lead, and I'm going to send the same message.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to send them my voter's pamphlet, you know, the sample thing you fill out, and I'm going to vote that way, and I'm going to send it into the DNC. It says, look, this is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And if the others do it, you know, and say, oh, we lose a few seats here, we lose a few seats there. And if the Republicans take it all back, what's the difference?
Yeah, really.
What can you do?
Well, like, you know, I've been toying with this idea, and I don't think I'm toying with it anymore. I would like to see a Republican landslide on in November of this year, just an absolute landslide. I'd like to see the Republicans come up with 65 seats in the Senate and 350 in the House.
That'd be okay.
Yeah, and then just watch the whole thing collapse. Everything. Watch Social Security be privatized, and the vultures move in and pick it clean. In about 10 minutes, there would be nothing left but the bleached bones of Social Security. Maybe that'll drive America. All of that maybe will drive Americans into the street where we can settle this for once and for all.
Well, what might be fun about it is the teabaggers. You know, they're going to probably want to start shooting it up, and we sit back and laugh as the police and the National Guard comes in and crushes them.
Yeah.
And nobody here gets hurt, but they brought it upon themselves.
Right. Well, one thing about a police state, when it first comes into power, the first thing it does is clean out some of the people that brought it to power, because the people that bring a police state to power think they have the ability to remove it if they want to.
They say brown shirts.
Yeah, the brown shirts. Look what happened to them. Look what's happening in Iran. The people that elected this psychopath Ahmadinejad really do feel that they had the power to remove him with the ballot box. And it turned out that they didn't have that power. So and now look what's happening. The military is or the Republican Guard or the Revolutionary Guard, whatever the hell they're called. I think it's Revolutionary Guard in Iran, are cracking heads and killing people, shooting people down in the street. The first people to die in an attempt to take to the streets in this country, if the Republicans do get control, the first people to be bloodied up and wasted will be the teabaggers, the brown shirts. They'll be the first to go. So you're right. It'll be kind of amusing to sit back and watch that. The only unamusing part about that is they're only the first to go. And then a whole line of people start being pushed toward the cattle cars. So, yeah, there would be some temporary satisfaction in watching the teabaggers disappear under the foot of real fascism. But what happens next would be a little bit
dicey.
That's the word I was looking for. All right, Stephen, thanks, man.
Uh-huh.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Yeah, that's the thing that is intriguing to me. It's just like the Zionist Jews who accept support from American Christian evangelicals. And not even Zionist Jews, Jews who believe in the existence of the State of Israel and believe in their culture and religious slash cultural identity and accept support from people like this Hagee, Pastor Hagee or Hagee, whatever his name is. There are all these right-wing Christian evangelicals in this country. And I, you know, I just wonder to myself, come on, who's kidding whom here? The Christian evangelicals are just waiting for a chance to slice the neck of every single Jew they can get their hands on. And the Muslims too. Why? Of course, the Muslims figured this out. But the Israeli Jews seem to not understand that they've made a pact with the worst kind of Satan that could be imagined. You know, the Christian evangelicals, these are the same people that burned the Jews at the stake 500 years ago. I don't get this.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
All right, not so humble and certainly not obedient. One more from Steve the banker. Mike, your question, what to do? Is so important for those who have nothing and lost everything. They need us still. I'm a delegate to the Democratic Party of Massachusetts, and this year I will do what I can to try to fix my party from inside. And that is one thing we can do, try to take back our Democratic Party. No, it's not easy, but a third party is, in my opinion, not the answer. We have tried that many times since I was in college, and the two parties are too big and money fed to be beat. But we can still reclaim the Democratic Party, and I am being very positive and optimistic. But I'm no one's fool. I will do whatever I can. But people must get off their backsides and call and fight and get informed and work to replace the state-level party structure. That is the way to reclaim our path and our party. We cannot fail. We cannot. For if we do, we will not be able to go home again. I do not have plans to do anything but win that fight, Steve. Steve, you have my undying admiration and deepest respect, but this is kind of where I guess you and I, our paths. What's the word I'm looking for? Not diverge. Hello, this is where paths diverge when you say. Where is it here? We can still reclaim the Democratic Party. See, I don't think we can. I really don't. I think the Democratic Party itself is just an absolute quivering mass of uselessness. And I mean that. I'm not trying to be cute here or try to come up with weird images. The Democratic Party leadership, whatever that is, had the force of law, constitutional law, behind it when it started to reclaim power during the Bush years. The Democratic Party had an obligation under the law, not an obligation because they were pissed off or an obligation because they didn't like George Bush or Dick Cheney, but the Democratic Party, in the majority, in the House, had an obligation under the law of this country, under the Constitution of this country. And you can't get any more fundamental than that, where it concerns the laws of this country, than the constitutional law. There was an absolute demand by the Constitution of the United States that George Bush and, if possible, Dick Cheney be impeached. Impeachment is an indictment. That's all it is. But it establishes a record so that as history is corrupted, irrevocably corrupted, there would have been a record. Now there's no record. This is why Dick Cheney and the corporate media are blasting his message every chance they get. Why do you think NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, CNN, wherever the hell it is, why do you think they give a platform to Dick Cheney? Because he's a nice man who did wonderful things for this country? Because he's a God-fearing Christian American who deserves to be heard? Come on. Come on. The function of television is to make people forget. The function of Dick Cheney is to make people forget permanently. An impeachment would have produced a record of the hearings, of testimony, of questions and answers, in the same manner that the impeachment of Dick Nixon occurred. Dick Nixon was never convicted. It didn't even go to the trial in the Senate. He resigned first. Bill Clinton went to trial. If the Republicans would take the time and the energy to impeach Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton lied about a partial sexual event with his short-time girlfriend, if that was enough to bring about his impeachment, and the war crimes, crimes against humanity and acts of treason committed by Dick Cheney and George Bush were not enough reason, the Democratic Party, Steve, or anybody else who's listening, is rotten, dead, it's maggot-infested. You want to try to reanimate that? Steve, I'm going to make a plea to you. Don't. Why do that? It's not going to be saved. My God, I've been listening to this argument for 40 years, ever since Nixon. 40 years. 1968. And especially in 1972. With this country involved in the most illegal war it's ever been involved in. And American students being shot dead on the goddamn campuses. Jackson State, Kent State. Boom, boom, boom. And Dick Nixon got reelected in a landslide. Whew. The Democratic Party is filthy, corrupt. Get away from it, Steve. I mean, that's just, you know, Uncle Mike's unasked for advice, and there's nothing more useless. I understand that. But, you know, I understand what you're trying, what you want to do. I mean, Jesus, God. You know, I watched people over the years in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s with the same kind of dedication. We got to reclaim the Democratic Party. I've been on that train. We got to get it back. It's garbage. It's pointless. The Democratic Party is useless. It has to die. And there's only one way it's going to die. If people who are dedicated to the restoration of justice in this country, that's all. That's all we want is a restoration of justice or the imposition of justice. Depending on your point of view, justice will be first imposed or justice will be reinstated. Depends on who you are. Depends a lot on your color of your skin, you know, your gender, yada yada, your sexual orientation, you know. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say if the goal is to establish justice in this country, then the Democratic Party is not the vehicle that's going to bring that about. It's not. It cannot. How in the hell can it? Look at its leadership. It took the Constitution and spit on it. And said, no, impeachment's off the table. We're looking forward. We have a president of the United States now who knows, he knows, Steve, better than you and I will ever know, the extent to which these criminal sons of bitches destroyed the country, violated the law, international law, every single thing they put their hands on, turned this country into a vile, foul, corrupt, torture country. And still he'll do nothing. Obama does nothing. Eric Holder does nothing. In fact, they do worse than nothing. They stop the lawsuits that would create a record. No. No, thank you, pal. Steve, I appreciate all your emails and your insights and so on and so forth. But I would no more work to reactivate or reanimate or reclaim, whatever the word is, the Democratic Party than I would open my own goddamn throat with a piece of broken glass. No. Absolutely no. Not now, not ever. It's dead. It killed itself. It committed suicide. And it's taken the whole goddamn country with it. That was the only chance we had. The last chance was for Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid in the background. No, he wouldn't have been convicted. We don't think. Nobody thought Nixon would have been convicted either. Or did they? But he got his ass out of Dodge. The last chance we had was for the House Judiciary Committee to begin impeachment hearings. And they refused to do it. As far as the Democratic Party is concerned, I couldn't care less about the future of the Democratic Party. Let it rot. It's already dead. Now let's bring on the fascists. Let's let them have their way with us until the American people decide that's enough. And if that happens, then maybe representative government will be reestablished. And then again, maybe not. Before the hour, back to your phone calls here. Warren is in Revere, Mass, listening on WWZN. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Mike. Greetings from Teabag, Massachusetts.
Yeah, right. Well, hello there.
Just as soon as I got on the phone, you almost got to one of my points when you were talking earlier about the American Idol election.
Yeah.
Has it ever occurred to you, because it does to me, maybe I'm more cynical than you, but I'm to the point where I think the Democrats, the current crop, are consciously collaborating with these corporatists and with the Republicans. I think they get together in a back room somewhere, and they work right along a corporatist blueprint.
It sure appears that way. I mean, as far as meeting in the back room, that may be pushing a little bit, but they don't have to. See, they don't have to meet in a back room. Everybody knows that as long as the big money is in our politics, it's going to be corrupted. What do you have to have? A third grade education to understand that? And coupled with the fact that the United States Supreme Court has now said that that flow of money is to be unchecked, unregulated, on everything. Just let it flow. Well, hello. So I think one of the reasons a lot of people are resigning, getting out of Dodge, and more Republicans, not resigning, but more Republicans than Democrats in both the House and the Senate said they're not going to stand for reelection. But you see how media are painting it in this country. They're painting it as if there's a hemorrhaging of Democratic office holders. The Republicans, as a percentage of their representation, has a much higher, and in raw numbers and as a percentage, has a much higher rate of people saying, I'm not going to run for reelection in both houses. But that's not the way media paints it, you see. But I think probably part of what's happening, these guys want to get paid. They're sick of working for a paltry $180,000, whatever the hell it is they make. You know, chump change to these people. They want to get out. Because they know what's coming. They know that representative democracy of, by, and for the people is a quaint little fairy tale that's now over. So, you know, give me my money. It's time for me to get paid. So that's why they're bailing out. I don't know. I don't think they get together in a back room. They don't have to. It's all right out in the open, Warren. I mean, it's all right out in the open, and nobody cares. We don't care. American people don't care.
Well, it seems to me that, I don't know, it's just like watching a drunken boxer throwing a fight, you know?
Yeah, there you go. That's pretty good. Yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks, Mike, for what you do.
All right. Appreciate you checking in, Warren. Sorry to be so cynical. What did Warren say? He may be a bigger cynic than me. I don't think it's not cynicism on his part or my part. It's not cynicism, you know, because somebody can realistically see what's going on. And like I said, what do you need? How much education do you need to be able to see this stuff? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Warren is a poli-sci major. I'm not. Maybe he's not either. Maybe he's just like me, just, working stiff, trying to make a living. Always have been, always will, until it finally comes to an end. How smart do you have to be? I mean, the whole thing shattered into a million pieces for me during the last two congressional elections ago. When it became apparent that the Democrats are going to take over the House. And before they even were sworn in, before John Boehner handed the gavel to Nancy Pelosi, she had already made it very clear. Well, when I become the first female Speaker of the House, goddamn, look at me! Woo-hoo! Look at me! Look at me! There's not going to be any impeachment. It's off the table. I mean, there's enough history here being made anyway, everybody. I'm a woman. I'm the first Speaker of the House as a woman. That's enough history. Why should I be the first female Speaker of the House and the one to initiate impeachment hearings against the most corrupt regime this country has ever experienced? Why should I do that? I got enough history here. I don't need that. I don't need that. My name will be in the books until they're no longer books. Nancy Pelosi, first female Speaker of the House. Hallelujah. That's me. I don't need what, impeachment. Impeachment's off the table. Who am I supposed to impeach? What am I supposed to do? What? Come on. Sit down. Shut up. Revel in my ascension to Speaker of the House. Don't pay any attention to the crimes that were committed, the laws that were broken. The murders that occurred. The torturing. Nah, 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 nah. Don't look at that. Look at me. Like my dress? Like my hair? Eh? I'm prettier than John Boehner, huh? Well, he's got a better tan than I do, but... That's when it hit the brick wall for me. That was it. No going back. When the Democratic Party leadership spit in my face. And then when the Obama administration spit again in my face. I'm an American, goddammit. I believe in justice and the rule of law. Huh? When the Speaker of the House of the Democratic Party, when the President of the United States, his administration, when all these Democrats decided to look at me like a piece of dirt under their feet. Because I kept saying, in my little world, just do what the Constitution requires. And they kept saying, sit down and shut up. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Maloney.